World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow writing and defining ideas about the Federal Trade Commission's case against Amazon as a monopolist. This is profoundly in the other direction from the earlier remarks by Ms. Kahn and others that Amazon was a predator. Now it's a monopolist. There is a major difference in that in English, but I'm not sure it is in Ms. Kahn's presentation, because this is all about the online store. And Professor, let me take a shot at what I think is the complaint. When you come to buy something on Amazon's store, which I do all the time, I have the assurance that it'll be delivered within hours, and it will be a very friendly Amazon driver who backs down my driveway, and my dog loves him, and the box will be displayed prominently in my garage, very politely, with a picture sent to me immediately. It's extremely reliable. Now, in addition, I had many choices when I chose to buy from Amazon of something as simple as pens. I use them all the time. I could have gone to any other shopping store online, which would have delivered in a similar fashion. My dog doesn't know that driver, but he would learn quickly. How is that a monopoly, Professor?
Well, it isn't. The question is always comes up in the monopolization cases is what is the market which you're trying to monopolize? And this is a constantly vexing sorts of issues because when you're looking at this market, you can say the entire retail market, including bricks and mortar stores, are part of this. You could then say it's all online providers, whether they're large or small. Or you could say it's the five or six biggest companies that have the largest share. Or you could say Amazon is so utterly unique that it turns out it's itself a monopolist, so it's got 100% of the market in its particular stores. And the question, which of these definitions do you use? The usual effort is to try and find, and it's slippery, a system known as cross-elasticity. Is this a situation, if you raise your prices, it turns out that I'm going to get more business. You lower your prices, I'm going to get less. And the elasticity is basically what you said. It's a measure of the ability of people to switch from one provider to another. Well, this is absolutely a very, very low-cost thing. One of the things that Ms. Kahn doesn't talk about in her complaint is the role of various kinds of intermediaries. So I, who never shop on anything, it's done by my wife. What I did is I went online. I said, compare prices. And what I did is there were about 10 apps that you could look at, which tell you how to compare prices across all different sellers. And then you could pick the one that you want to pick based upon that information, which means that the switching costs, given that kind of intermediation, are extremely low. Amazon understands full well that particular ability. And what it wants to do is to keep people on its site. And the only way it can do that is to give them a guarantee that if you come there, they're getting the lowest possible price, and they don't have to go look elsewhere. Well, the buy box is essentially the method that they use to assure their customers that they're getting the lower price. If that box is on, it means that there's nobody out there in the world who's selling this stuff at a lower rate. And if that box is on, it means when you get the advantage of the Amazon Prime services, you know you're getting a low price and a speedy delivery. Why do you want to look elsewhere? Well, Ms. Kahn doesn't understand what the process is about. And so she thinks if you take people off the buy box, their customers are going to tank. They're not going to get any. That's exactly right. Because when it turns out you take off the buy box, customers now know it's better to go look somewhere else. She sort of thinks that what they're trying to do is to coerce all these other vendors to sell at the higher price that Amazon sells upon as a device to raise prices. But that's not going to work. Why would people who are making money selling at a lower price raise their prices if it's going to harm them? So what she sees as an attack on the market to raise prices is, in fact, a very clever way to make sure that you keep customers by giving low prices. So she calls this thing anti-competitive because she has the wrong prediction as to why it's there and how it operates, when in fact it's a pro-competitive device. This is not just a simple mistake. She's going 180 degrees in the wrong direction. And every time you look at how they kind of explain this, they don't do it. She's the master on television. I've seen her a couple of times. I mean, she could be my public relations agency anytime. She's really good at that. But she never explains why these things are. She always says, we are going to make these markets more competitive than they were before, without explaining how. So that's the first illustration. And the other one then turns out to be Prime. And as you've indicated, they have a fabulous service. Why would anybody want to go elsewhere, particularly if it's going to take longer by virtue of the fact that you have to coordinate two vendors instead of dealing with just one?
Yes, I wanted to mention the Prime delivery system because it's, for example, these pens that I buy routinely, they might be cheaper somewhere else, you know, lower cost, same product, same identical product. However, Amazon, knowing that I use them, keeps them in the warehouse nearby. That's how they can do it within hours. Also, if the price is higher, I'm ready to pay it because he's friendly towards Sailor. He's always on time. He's very polite, and it's here within hours. That's worth something to me. Is that part of the FTC complaint that I'm being persuaded by good service?
Yes. I mean, what happens if you look at some of the elements of the complaint, they sort of revert back to the predation claim. Oh, they're doing this at such a low price, they're preventing other people from coming into the market and becoming as big as they are. But remember, you're actually wrong on one point. You already saw that box, and you know you're getting the lowest price with respect to this particular commodity. So you're not in the position of having to make a trade-off between getting speedier delivery at a higher price and getting a lower price and a slower delivery. That's why they're so successful. I mean, they have figured this out. There's a very useful test for this as to whether or not it's a monopoly practice on either of these sides. Suppose you had a company like Amazon, and it was only 1/100th of its current size. And then you ask them if they wanted to increase market share, would they put the buy box in or would they keep it off? They put it back on again for exactly the same reason. It's an efficiency device which works no matter how large your particular firm is. So the question you want to ask is, does anybody else use buy boxes or similar devices in order to help? And if they don't, you want to figure out why. What is so clear about this particular complaint is there's no intellectual curiosity between what the FTC does and the way in which it works. And it may well be that there's some people who don't use a buy box. And then the question you're going to start to ask, what is it about them that means that this is not an efficient situation? What is it about the other people that they use? It may be a variant on a buy box, but it's not going to be a sort of keep going searching. Maybe some people rely on the comparative sites of the that are put up by third parties to do this. I don't know what all these answers are, but let's be very clear about this. The presumption is when you start to see a business that's highly successful and hasn't engaged in any kind of cartelization, any dubious merger practices of any of the sort.
We have 1 minute left, Professor. Okay. 1 minute.
The one thing that you start to realize when you start looking at all of this stuff is the way in which they got there is they managed to supply people something that they actually wanted. And if they've done that, then what happens is what you have to do is you have to respect it. There's a doctrine called Grinnell, which says antitrust law does not kick in because you're big. And she sort of acknowledges that. You have to become big by doing it in some kind of an illicit or improper fashion. And it turns out she just cannot make out that particular case. And she doesn't cite any of the precedents that are applicable in the area. So what you do here is you get a large degree of bombast. But the real thing that you worry about is not only is she messing up this particular case, but if you look at the merger guideline, they are so hostile to mergers, so understate the efficiency procedures that are involved in these cases, that she becomes a general menace to the overall health and welfare of the economy.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, I'm John Baxter.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.